podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It's not final yet. 2-1 Argentina leads. It's time for Woolchuck's mixed bag.
Let's shake it up and wait for them to blow the whistle to send Argentina to the final right now.
You want a chocolate? Mama.
Mama. Leave the gut.
Mama.
Take the cannoli.
Mama always said life was like a box of chocolates.
How do they get them back?
Just throw it in the bag.
You never know what you're going to get.
There it is. 2-1. Argentina rallies to beat England, who led for the majority of the match in the 85th. They equalize it, and then in extra time, or stoppage time, Argentina with the go-ahead goal. It'll be Spain and Argentina in the final. I'll be there at Cosm. Get your tickets now. Cosm.com/World Cup. On Sunday, Saturday, we'll have the third place game between France and England. We were talking before the show off air, like, why bother with a third place game?
Yeah, this is where everybody who hasn't played in the World Cup gets to play.
Like, I wonder, yeah. Like, are the views
we clear the bench for this
still
one.
Strong? Like, do you think England's still going to go, like, France and England, those fan bases are still going to go wild for the third place finish?
I don't think the fan bases will go wild, but I think it'll do huge numbers on TV, you know?
Might be an opportunity to go to a match. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm.
If you're down there in Miami, it's probably going to be scorching hot.
I know a lot of people had a hell of a time yesterday getting tickets at slashed prices to get in there. I saw conversations on Facebook of people flipping tickets for $600.
Wow.
For the semifinal yesterday, France-Spain.
That's amazing.
I guess demand just crashed. Mm. And once you only have a couple of fan bases, and maybe their fan bases are tapped out.
Yeah, maybe
they've spent their money.
Sure.
You know, thinking, let's get it in while we can now. But for whatever reason, yeah, the later the tournament has gone, the more accessible the tickets have been. So, yeah, get to Miami for Saturday, I guess, and you can watch England against France.
Yeah, Harry Kane and Mbappe. But heartbreak again for England, as they were so close.
You're flying home, right? If you're an England guy. Yeah. I mean, if you're an England fan, you're not going down there. You're flying home, right? Right after this one. Atlanta's got a huge airport. You got all your bags.
Oh, yeah.
You're trying to get your ticket back. You're getting
I'm rich England guy.
You're getting on British Airways right now and flying home from Atlanta.
The
right?
change fees are pretty high.
Yeah, but I just got to get the hell out of here. I can't.
Probably pretty disgusted.
Yeah.
I need a pint.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Abbey.
I'll tell you what, I think when it's all said and done, I don't think this is going to be one of his finest hours. And after the game, he wants to fight everybody, you know, kind of a deal.
Yeah, he's frustrated.
He's frustrated, but he did not play worth a damn.
I mean, Bellingham?
Yeah.
Is he being a jerk out here?
Yeah, he's
him and Messi kind of went at it a little bit.
He wants
right
to fight everybody.
End.
He wants to fight.
Yeah, he's not happy at all. Yeah. On3 has put out their NIL evaluations for college football this year. Outside of Arch Manning, who of course is going to have the greatest NIL valuation, who do you think in college football crack this top 10?
I think Miami paid a buttload of money for Darian Mensah.
Number one outside of Arch Manning. We remove him from this conversation. $6.5 million is his NIL valuation for Darian Mensah at Miami. And that was a late ad.
Yeah, I mean, that was controversial, man.
I mean, I wonder if Texas Tech hadn't been able to get Sorsby, and I know Joey McGuire is doing, you know, what he needs to say to give Will Hammond that confidence. They were looking to try and add a legit quarterback to try and get them over the hump in the playoff, right? And Will Hammond might end up being really good, but he's coming off an injury. They didn't look at him as like, okay, that guy for sure is going to be able to win us a playoff game. They wanted to get a proven commodity quarterback. Could they have gone over the $6.5 million? I think so. I mean, Darian Mensah, there could have been a bidding war for him out there if they had gotten this Sorsby news a little bit sooner. Would have been wild.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they're kicking themselves about the entire situation. But yeah, Mensah makes a lot of sense getting the bag there. I mean, I would think a lot of these guys are quarterbacks other than, I mean, Jeremiah Smith, let's just throw him out there.
He's number three. He's tied at three with $5 million. Well, I guess he's kind of tied at second. You got three guys all at $5 million. Dante Moore.
Oh, yeah, Dante Moore for sure.
And then Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss.
Okay, good.
Those are all the $5 million club.
What about Levitt?
Levitt's next up, $4.5 million at LSU. He's number five. How about the quarterback at Washington,
Oh, DeMond?
Yes.
DeMond Williams?
And he's got $4 million, and I still don't really get how he can show face back there.
He tried to bail on him.
Yes. It's
yeah.
a weird situation.
Very weird.
I think Jed Fish came out and was just like, hey, we feel for the guy because he's a young dude, and he's got a bunch of teams calling him, saying they're willing to give him multiple millions more than what he's getting now. Of course he was interested in that.
The only school with two players in the top 10, though, is Brian Prodigy's LSU Tigers. As they've got the quarterback,
got
Sam
the tackle
Leavitt.
Too, right?
Yeah, is it the Seton? Yeah.
Jordan Seton.
Yeah. Yeah, we got
and
them both.
And that guy is looking incredible. Just the side-by-sides from here a year ago, him a year ago at Colorado to now, he's looking like Tyron Smith, just physically.
Oh, he's like a 300-plus pounder that looks lean?
Yes. Yes. Oh. And he was looking doughy. Like at Colorado, he had not filled in. Like, he did not look like he was hitting the weight room. He was just a massive, strong human being. Now, he looks like, my gosh, just shredded. Like, he is putting in the work. He's got on a meal plan. That dude's physique is what you, yeah, Tyron Smith-esque. $4 million
Dude,
for him.
I saw one of the edge rushers for Texas Tech doing a like what I eat in a day video on social. These guys are living like freaking kings, dude.
Yeah.
Absolute kings. Whatever food you want, whenever you want it, it is right there and ready to rock and roll for you.
Crazy.
Living the freaking dream.
Absolutely. I mean, everything you want, just at your fingertips there. It's nuts.
Ribeye for lunch, filet for dinner.
Craziness. We do have the college football contenders by tier. This is courtesy of Brad Crawford, CBS Sports. Your clear front runners. He's got Ohio State. He's got Notre Dame. I still got, like, I love Marcus Freeman. I might be so wrong about C.J. Carr, but just right now going into the season, I don't get the C.J. Carr hype.
No. I've seen enough Notre Dame film to not get too excited about that one.
Not overly impressive to me. No.
I guess, is it
we'll
just
see.
The Notre Dame thing? Because he's getting so hyped. And he started as a true freshman last year,
they
right?
ran the ball so well. I mean, just the way they ran the ball.
He had two first-round running backs.
Yeah.
He didn't really have to do a lot.
Yeah, he did not.
Oregon, Miami, and Georgia are your top clear front runners. So you do not have Texas. You do not have the defending champion Indiana Hoosiers. Texas and Indiana are next. The program leadership should prevail. They're on your next tier. Then the rosters that are worth a second look that could get it done. You've got LSU. You've got Texas Tech. You've got SC, which I don't understand that either with Lincoln Riley. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you buying stock in USC right now?
But about time.
Maybe. I mean, that quarterback's pretty solid there. Yeah. I do like him.
Maiva,
yep. Alabama, Oklahoma, and then Texas A&M would be your next tier of college football teams. And then you've got BYU, SMU, and Houston would be your final tier. The schedule assistance looms large. SMU is giving Kevin Jennings a lot of hype right now. He's got his Heisman video out there. Who knows? Maybe the Pony Up will be elite there in Dallas and fighting for another playoff spot in the ACC. Let's go to, I know, Eric, you were a big Workaholics fan with me.
Yeah, for sure.
Blake Anderson, Workaholic star, told a story on the Funny You Should Ask podcast about Dallas Maverick Klay Thompson. Now, at the time, he's with the Golden State Warriors. They've just won an NBA championship. Blake Anderson, Cali guy, and was a fan of the Warriors. Here's his story about Klay Thompson hooking him up for an after party.
I mean, the person who I like have a close connection to, who is just going to be my guy forever, is actually Klay Thompson. When they won their second championship, I was at that game.
Wow.
And I took my younger brother.
Nice.
And, you know, we were at an all-time high. And after they had won the championship, what do we do now? And, like, caught wind of, like, the official team after party. Players are showing up. I'm, like, talking to the club, like, yo, can I get my brother in? Can I get my brother in? He's like, dude, this is the official after party.
Yeah.
It's over. I can't have this night without him. No. So it's like, all right, I guess that's it. Like, cool, I had this moment, but I'm going to go home. It was cool. Cool night. We saw the championship. Whatever. So we're walking. I'm like talking. I'm like, damn, dude. Like, starting to get an Uber, and then all of a sudden we hear this, Blake. Like, what the hell? Turn around, and it's this giant black SUV, and in the window, hanging out of it, is Klay Thompson.
Oh my god.
And we're like, Klay. Like, what the hell? He's like, Blake, what are you doing? I'm like, we're leaving. I can't get my brother. And he's like, get in the car,
yo,
man. Get in the car.
Hey.
We get in this SUV. It's Clay Thompson, his brother. What the hell is going on? He's like, dude, feel my hat. It's still wet with champagne. And it's like, sure enough, it's wet with the champagne. He's like, we go around in the back. The team is there waiting to go in. We ended up walking back into the club with my brother, with the entire Warriors team.
Oh, my God.
And it's all because of Clay.
So cool. Now, it helps when you've got the hair that Blake does.
If he stands out.
He does. Like, I'm sure Clay Thompson, if he was a Workaholics fan at the time, or even afterwards, which I'm sure he was, knew who Blake was. He's like, oh, there he is. That's Blake Anderson from Workaholics. But pretty freaking sweet story. I mean, it helps, you know, with the connection there, Hollywood. But Clay Thompson, just getting in, him and his bro, for the after party.
I love it, man.
Pretty sweet deal.
Clay's a man of the people.
Now, I got a contender for Schmuck of the Week here, fellas. Western Kentucky. Oh, my gosh. When I read this, I was thinking, what are you doing? We have Victory Vaca, who is an offensive lineman. And his mother, he's a 6'3", 335-pound. He's actually a D lineman, excuse me. He has bounced around a little bit, journeyman player, spent a year at BYU, 1 year at the College of the Canyons, then Texas Southern, and he's got his final year of eligibility here at Western Kentucky. Unfortunately, he learned that his mother passed away back in April. So he flies home. Western Kentucky says, hey, we get it. The coaching staff says, we're willing to give you some time. You need to grieve. According to Vaca, an assistant strength coach calls him up 9 days before his mother's funeral. The coach told him that he was expected back in Bowling Green in June and provided him with a workout plan for the summer. Vaca's like, fair enough. Although the expectation was already set, his position coach reached out to ask Vaca where he was then on May 26th. Travis Taylor, the chief of staff at Western Kentucky, told Vaca and his agent 1 day later that the program has now decided to revoke his scholarship. He was cut from the team just a few days before he was expected back on campus, and that was his understanding, at least, of what happened. So he goes home. He's grieving his mother's death. He's attending the funeral. Team's like, hey, come back. You'll be good. We give you this entire workout plan, and then they just decide, you know what? We're good here. You're cut. We're taking away your scholarship.
Mm.
Just a whole freaking move, man.
Nasty work, dude.
Tough. Try to be more sensitive, but... You know, I think that's the other side of the coin in this new environment that we have in college sports, where the players can leave at any time. You haven't built the relationships. People are inherently not going to care because they're not going to know as much about you.
Mm.
They're not going to have you top of mind. You're just another player who's coming through the system in a very transactional environment where you're trying to get the best out of it for you possible. We're trying to get the best part of it for us possible. And it's something that's lost is the family feel, the family nuance.
Well, and it goes to another level. Then he's like, fine, I want to enter the portal. What does Western Kentucky do?
No.
They block him from entering.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where I draw the line.
This is crazy.
There's no explaining that.
They would not allow him to enter the portal. So he has a legal battle with the school. Western Kentucky then submits a legislative relief waiver to the NCAA that they finally got enough pressure that would allow him to enter the portal, but the waiver was then denied by the NCAA because it's now too late. So the whole thing is just, I feel for the player here. You know, it sucks. Your mother passes away. I can't imagine, you know, the heartbreak there, but it's just so effed up. You can't play here. You no longer have your scholarship. Oh, we can't let you to the portal. All right, fine, we will let you into the portal, but now the NCAA is like, oh, it's a little late now. Sorry, buddy. You can't do it.
Wild. Thank you, Wolchuk.
Sad.
Nick Harris, Star Telegram. He's been to every Dallas World Cup soccer game. We'll talk to him a little bit about that, but you know he's on the beat for the Cowboys. He's getting ready for training camp, and we'll talk with Nick coming up next.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
The nation. All right, welcome back. Nick Harris, Star Telegram, set to join us. Let's talk some Cowboys. A little training camp preview with Nick Harris in just a moment. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. And a good afternoon, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, fellas. How are y'all?
Amazing. I mean, we just watched Argentina with another improbable escape. Is this like the fourth one of the tournament for them? It's got to be some kind of a record, man. I'm sure you were watching.
Yeah, it feels like it for sure. The goals that they've had in the knockout stage before the 79th minute are a total of two. After the 79th minute have been nine. It's been unreal. They just never die. You got to finish them off.
What an experience, really, that probably started with the Cape Verde game a couple of weeks ago, and it's just been one after another. So we'll see if they can do it again in the final, and looking forward to more of your thoughts on this World Cup. Nick, I'm very jealous that you got to go to all the Dallas games, by the way.
Oh, man, it was an absolute blast. DFW did such a good job putting this tournament on and the nine matches that they had, the teams that they had come through, the superstars that they had come through, all four semifinalists. And then the top seven goal scorers in the tournament came through DFW. It was a dream tournament for the area, and certainly when the World Cup comes back, maybe as soon as 2038, I would assume that a similar slate is on the billing.
Now, with the Cowboys, of course, the biggest story of the day is that tag deadline to get a long-term deal passing this afternoon. Reaction to that, but you know, more than that, I'm just curious of how clear do you think it is that George Pickens is going to have a smooth trip through training camp?
Yeah, it was pretty expected at this point that, you know, that deadline would pass without the two sides working toward a long-term extension. And that's eventually what happened at 3 p.m. I think moving forward, all we can take is really from what George Pickens has told us. And, you know, he's said that, you know, he's content with playing on the tag. He's ready to roll through the year and he's going to be present in Oxnard. And so, you know, we take that for what it is. And, you know, I would be a fool if I said that I'm putting it off my radar that there won't be any drama, but it certainly looks that way. And I personally hope so. I would love to be able to just focus on football at training camp, but, you know, it's certainly something to keep an eye on moving forward, and we'll see if anything develops out of it.
Nick, I found it interesting just listening to Lewis Riddick talk about this, and he made the point of, you know, the Cowboys might be kind of hesitant to give him a long-term deal right now because you just don't know how he's going to respond to that. Have you heard anything? What do you think about wanting him to play on the tag to just keep the motivation, really? Because if once he's paid, it's like, well, I don't know what's going to happen after that with the individual.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure part of the thinking around not giving the long-term extension. I mean, they had the one-year trial period, and on the field it was fantastic. Off the field it was, honestly, I think if you asked anybody based on, you know, the reviews that came out of Pittsburgh, I would say probably better than expected. And he's been a good teammate. He's loved in the locker room. He's been a big part of the offensive success. But, you know, you want to see that stacked on top of just one season. And specifically in a season where they are competing for playoff contention. And, you know, those performances really matter late in the season. And so, you know, it makes sense to run it back another year to have another trial period per se. But, you know, as far as, you know, hesitance around a long-term extension, I mean, that's the point of the franchise tag, right? And I think, you know, that's just kind of the nature of any franchise tag situation is the hesitance on a long-term commitment. And, you know, I respect Lewis's take, but, you know, it's pretty consistent with most franchise tag situations that we see around the league.
Wide receiver rankings out today, CD just ahead of George Pickens. Do you think there's a case to be made just coming off of last year that maybe Pickens is the more dangerous player now?
Well, I think there is a case to be made. I still think at the end of the day, CD probably has the more all-around complete game. You can put him anywhere on the line of scrimmage. He can run any type of route. He can man up against any type of corner and find wins. I think the one thing I would like to see CD improve on is the drops that we saw last year. Felt pretty uncharacteristic, you know, as the season went on, especially in that first game against Philadelphia. Really felt like it cost them in that game. So that's something that I think he could certainly improve upon going into this next season, which is already year seven for him, which is wild to say. But George Pickens, you know, he's got the body control. He's got the size. And, you know, as this offense wants to get better in the red zone going into 2026, George Pickens is probably the guy they lean on the most. And so, you know, I don't feel like you can go wrong with either option. You know, back last offseason, I'll give the Cowboys credit. They were you know, talking from the very beginning, hey, it's not a 1-2 situation. It's a 1A, 1B. I'm like, yeah, you know, one's eventually going to get more targets than the other. But it actually ended up playing out just that way. And so, you know, we'll see if they can keep that consistent as time goes on. But, you know, if we're taking for 2025 for what it is, both of those guys are dangerous weapons in their own right.
Nick, what's going to be your approach in watching practices? Are you just going to kind of keep things in check, you know, in your evaluations and stuff until they actually say play the Rams and then play the Saints like a week later, or we start to see preseason games? How are you going to approach just watching these practices?
Yeah, I mean, I'm keeping an eye on these position battles. That's going to be the number one thing. But it is funny you mentioned that, Brian, just because, you know, I've had conversations with some people in the media recently being like, man, we might need to temper our expectations as far as training camp standouts go this year, just because last year, if you had asked me at the end of camp,
right,
who had the best camp, I would have said, man, Kyer Elam, Jaden Blue, and Kenneth Murray looked good at camp last year.
Yeah, Donovan Ezeraku.
Turpin. I will say with Ezeraku, he was still, you know, pretty productive in the run game.
Sure.
And, you know, I feel like if quarterbacks just didn't have to get the ball, or if they weren't able to get the ball out so quick with what the secondary was giving them, then I feel like Ezeraku would have had more sacks at the end of the day. But, you know, I look at Elam and Blue and Sanborn and some of these other guys, and I was like, man, they didn't perform at all last season. So, you know, I definitely am going to take that more with a grain of salt this year, but that Rams practice is going to be really big, especially for that left tackle competition that we're going to be talking about a lot in Oxnard. And then that running back two spot with Jaden Blue, Phil Moffa. Does Malik Davis sneak his way back into that mix? Does Israel Abanikanda or Dominic Richardson make things interesting? And so, you know, there's still going to be some fun things to look at when it comes to practice. But I think for me also, you know, how is this offense going to be developing? Is there an extra layer? You know, Brian Schottenheimer's talked about moving George Pickens around. They haven't had the opportunity to put him on the field in team periods yet this offseason. What does that look like? And so there's going to be still some really valuable things to pull from that.
Yeah, I just wonder if, like, the fan base is expecting us to kind of temper our observations, you know what I'm saying? That, like, you know, like, well, man, who's looking good? Well, yeah, I'll tell you when – give me a couple weeks, I'll tell you who's really looking good. Do you think the fans miss out on that if we kind of temper our expectations a little bit talking about these guys?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're missing out on anything. I would say look up in week five and tell me if the you know, if the progress is still mattering, because you can have the best training camp in training camp history, but if you don't perform well early in the season, you're going to lose your job.
It's Nick Harris, Star Telegram, here with you on The Fan, as I feel like Brian's setting us up to give us a bunch of no comments to our training camp
not
questions.
At all. No, not at all. Not at all. I just, like you said, I'm going to be the one guy that's probably going to be not doing that. You know, I'll be like, no, I saw this today. And, you know, and you wonder about that getting, you know, does it get yourself? Because he's right about Elam. And I was sitting next to Nick at dinner, and we had this conversation, you know, about, like, man, how do you approach a training camp where you want to tell everybody how you're, you know, defense is doing this. Christian Parker's got him doing this. And then, you know, 70% of the fan base is like, nah, man, we've heard this last year. We heard this, flus,
no,
linebackers,
eye rolls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're cynical about it. Anything to add to that, Nick, or your perspective on that?
Yeah, 100% feel the same way. I think though there were some times still at camp last year where it was like, yeah, the secondary is a little shaky as a whole. You know, there's still going to be some new pieces that they're going to have to figure out, injuries that they're going to have to figure out. Whereas I feel like though they don't necessarily have all of those issues playing against them this time around, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's trial and error from our part, too.
Now, one thing I'm interested in is the role of Jayshon Barham, the rookie, the hybrid linebacker edge. Is that what the plan is? How difficult is it to learn that at the NFL level? How important is it for defenses like Christian Parker's to have one of those?
Yeah, they're going to play around with him quite a bit. It was interesting during OTAs and minicamp that we saw him, you know, working with the edge group during position drills at times, and then working with the off-ball linebackers at times. And so, you know, his length, his explosion, his power, they're going to try to use that in some multiple spots. I'm fascinated by him as well. You know, when we talk about this inside linebacker position, you know, you have the D winners and DeMarvian Overshown. But the big question is, okay, if one of those guys goes down and you need someone to start for 2, 3, 4 games, shoot, half a season, who is that guy going to be? Is it going to be a Shamar James, a Jayshon Barham, Curtis Robinson? You know, and where does that proven depth come from you're not going to find a proven guy. So, yeah, a guy like Barham, if he's able to step in and give value to multiple positions, it could be really big for them.
You mentioned some of the position battles. Which ones are you going to have your eye on? And is there a veteran that you think, man, if they don't have a good camp, they are very much in danger of not making this roster?
Yeah, left tackle is going to be a big one. I think Guyton, they're going to give the runway to win that job. I think this is more about challenging Guyton, but I'm curious to see how he responds to that. The running back two spot is going to be, I think, probably the more hotly contested battle, just because I think they have a lot of fresh bodies that are ready to compete for that. And, you know, Javonte Williams can't take on 282 touches again this year. And they need him to survive that three-year contract and be healthy through that three-year contract, or at least for 2 years, because it's guaranteed for 2 years. And so they need one of those guys to step up and take that load off. As far as maybe a veteran to keep an eye on, I would say I would look at Malik Hooker, although I do feel confident that Malik Hooker can have a bounce back year in this defense. But if he doesn't come out, you know, ready to roll, I think they have depth behind him now to where they don't have to rely on, you know, somebody who's not, you know, picking up the slack, you know, whether it's a PJ Locke or it's, you know, if they have to move Caleb Downs back to that position and then figure out maybe a Jalen Thompson situation at nickel corner. I mean, they have flexibility now in the secondary to where they don't have to rely upon, you know, veteran guys just as bodies. So I would maybe look at like a Malik Hooker in that situation. But even then, I feel confident that Hooker can, you know, bounce back and have a good season this year.
Nick, would you totally rule out a veteran signing like a Von Miller or a Bobby Wagner at any point during training camp?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out, especially with, you know, a lot of these veterans have gotten to the point now to where it's like, hey, call me on August 20th. And so it wouldn't surprise me if there's a situation for that with the Cowboys. I wouldn't say get your hopes up, though. I would definitely not say that. You know, the cap situation is pretty tight for them at the moment. And as far as the flexibility goes to where they can maneuver around the cap, they've pretty much done what they're comfortable with doing in that instance. And so I wouldn't, you know, maybe be looking at a Von Miller or a, you know, Bobby Wagner, but maybe like a Bobby Okereke who's still out there. You know, maybe that's a situation. Or even Jadeveon Clowney, if he's still available on August 20th, then maybe that's another guy that they run it back with. But we'll see as time goes on.
You like Spain or England? Or I'm sorry, Spain or Argentina in the final?
Yeah, I would love to say Spain, but man, Argentina just has, you know, something cooking for them. You know, once it gets to the 80th minute, it just feels like the game just starts. So I'm going to be rooting for Spain, but we'll see.
Wow. Going against the GOAT, huh?
Yeah, hey, you got baby GOAT in Lamine Yamal. So nice. That's where my allegiances will be.
Well, thanks for your time and your reflections, and we'll see you in Oxnard, sir.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Y'all have a good one.
There he goes, Nick Harris, Star Telegram, one of our favorite Cowboys insiders and reporters with you here in the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Okay, five teams set up for an offensive breakout in 2026. We'll talk about that and get you set up for football's finest coming up at the top of the hour here on...
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan. Thank you very much. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. It's been a thermostat Wednesday, as the morning show talked about that and posted on social about that. And we're just trying to find the perfect equilibrium. We have the weirdest thermostat where if you set it just below 70, it gets too cold. And then if you go above 70, it stops working. Like the AC stops working if you put that on 71. It's going to go to 76 with maximum humidity in here within 30 minutes. So I don't know what the hell's going on, but yeah. Apologize to the guys on the morning show.
Well, the morning show guys, every one of them all wear hoodies in here, right?
Yeah.
Sean wears a hoodie.
Yeah.
Sean wears a hoodie. Bobby's going to wear a hoodie if it's 105.
Look at me right now. I'm back in this beanie. I'm actually thinking about some isotoners. You know, some of those gloves that you could still use a laptop with that Dan Marino brought to us.
Those would be sweet.
Ted Wynn of The Athletic gives us offenses ready to break out in 2026.
Ooh.
Now, what would constitute a breakout for you? Is it a touchdown more?
I would think, and I guess it depends on each scenario a little bit, but like I'm thinking for sure you're a top 10 offense.
Yeah, I immediately go top 10.
Maybe like bottom 10 to top 10.
Yeah. Or, I mean, doable. Heck, if you were like bottom 5, are you now a top 12, top 15?
Yeah, relative to expectation, like the Cowboys could have a breakout defense this year and be like 14th in the league.
Are you doubling up like where you were a year ago?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would want to, you know, it's a matter of semantics. But how do you define breaking out is important? The Cowboys were at 27.7. If they added a touchdown, they would be 34, and they would jump past New Orleans into a top 10 offense of all time. I don't want to rule that out. That should be the goal. Let's get our offensive line with Booker and Guyton playing their best football. Let's have Flannoy be one of the best wide receiver threes in the NFL.
Yeah.
Span Ford. You know, and then I think the coaching, we need to have the coaching, and obviously Dak Prescott stay healthy. But from 27, it would be a mild breakout. It wouldn't be one of the top 5 breakouts because you're staying elite. But they were only 7th in scoring, right? So I'd love to see him try to get up 32, 33, something like that.
Does anybody have the list of who, like, can you tell me where the Chargers were last year on offense?
I think
Mike McDonald kind of showing up with that crew might be a breakout offense if you want to ask me like, oh, what's the team you think might break? Well, and I think that also they have some guys. I mean, who they got?
They were around 20.
Yeah, McConkey, Quentin Johnston, good. You know, Gadsden, Hampton. I mean, they got some good young players. Yeah. And then their offensive line's all coming back.
Yeah, and they signed Biotish to play center for them. Mike McDaniel's huge there.
Yeah.
And they actually made Ted Wynn's list.
Oh, did they? Okay.
They were around 20th last year, but they brought in the fullback from Miami,
Ingold.
And then they brought in a great blocking tight end, Charlie Kolar, and signed Njoku.
Yeah.
So to go with Gadsden, they're set up to run 13.
Mm-hmm.
And Wynn said Kolar is so good that he might actually be technically their starter when they're in 11, even compared to Aronde Gadsden. So it seems like they might have the best tight end room. And apparently Mike McDaniel has a pretty good history of mitigating the lack of good guard play, which would be their weakness right now.
Yeah, I mean, he had to figure that out with the Dolphins for the last few years. They have never had a good offensive line, and so he does a great job at masking that, still being able to find explosive runs in the run game despite having at least two offensive linemen that don't belong on the field. And then from a passing game standpoint with Tua, it was all about you were forced to get the ball out quickly, which is not something you want to be your entire passing game. You don't want that, but he can add that element for Herbert, who has gotten beat up quite a bit because of the offensive line situations with the Chargers for the last few years. So they will add an element of him being able to get the ball out quicker, all the motion and stuff. They will just scheme up open guys left and right. And I like the personnel that they have. Like O'Marrion Hampton, he should benefit hugely from this. And one of the things that McDaniel really struggled at in Miami was the short yardage stuff and just having that physicality. But like, that's what Jim Harbaugh's all about.
Yeah.
He's about the old school trench stuff. This will be the best offensive line he's probably had.
Just can they stay healthy,
if they can
right?
stay healthy. Slater and Ault are outstanding. And then Herbert, like, he's going to be able to do – it must be such a breath of fresh air for McDaniel to be with Herbert, a quarterback that it's limitless in terms of what you can do with your offense, whereas with Tua, he could have the biggest playbook in the world, and he can only use a very small percentage of it because of all of Tua's limitations. Herbert's the exact opposite. He can do whatever you want. He can run. He can throw it deep. He can throw it quick. He can throw it short. I mean, there's nothing he really can't do other than win in the playoffs.
I mean, I've never really believed that much in Herbert, but with McDaniel, with those tackles getting healthy, maybe this is going to be his breakout to being an actual all-pro level guy who can, win in the postseason. Okay, Jags are the next team on this list. Offense is poised to break out in 2026. Weeks 1 through 8 last year, they averaged 20.8 points per game. After that, 32.8.
Wow.
They had the second best offense in the second half of the season last year. They traded for Jacoby Myers, and they had a break to reevaluate. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's Liam Cohen getting some time to settle in. So now this is his second full year with the team, and they brought in Borkircher from A&M to add to their tight end room, as you would expect everybody on that coaching tree to be exploring But they were an under the radar team for me last year. The breakout of Parker Washington as their slot wide receiver is a storyline that is still under the radar a little bit, but really flushes out their weapons when you consider that he might have just emerged as one of the top slot players in the game.
Parker Washington saved him because Brian Thomas Jr. had a horrible season last year, and he was amazing as a rookie. And then going into year two, it's like, where is this guy? And there were questions, are they going to end up trading him? Maybe they still end up doing that, but I just have this feeling when it comes to Jacksonville, we've seen it where it's like 1 year they do really well. Heck, I think the first Doug Peterson season, it was very successful, and it was a similar story, like second half of the season, really good. And then what happen in year two. So they kind of have to just prove we can sustain success here if you're Jacksonville. But Liam Cohen is a really good offensive coordinator.
Yeah, it was one of those things where his offense is so intricate, especially pre-snap, and they led the league in the false start kind of penalties. Like, they couldn't get crap figured out. By the end of the season or second half of the season, everybody was able to get on the same page. The Jacoby Myers thing was huge for him as well. So I do think Liam Cohen is one of the most respected. If you talk to defensive players, I think a lot of them will tell you, that Liam Cohen, he's got my head spinning.
Yeah, this could be the year where he joins that group of, hey, I'm off the Shanahan McVay tree, but now I'm doing my own thing and I'm really freaking good at it, like Ben Johnson. And maybe he's already there for some people, apparently defensive players. Okay, we were just talking about Bo Nix yesterday during a commercial. Actually, Denver is number two on Ted Wynn's list here, 17th in offensive DVOA last year. So they were around average with a great offensive line. And you know, there's a lot of limitations on Bo Nix, but they bring in Jaylen Waddle. They get J.K. Dobbins back healthy, which is huge for them. They were 10th in explosive run rate before Dobbins got injured in week 10 last year and fell to 28th after that. We'll have to see how the Davis Webb experience goes.
Yeah, because that's a big question. First time calling plays.
They've promoted him to play caller to protect him. Teams were circling around, and so will Sean Payton actually be able to follow through on that for a year and give another guy play calling duties? But some of the stuff on Bo Nix is crazy. He led the league in failed completions.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers under pressure, abysmal. Mm-hmm. Okay, you put him under pressure and he's about done, and constantly throws short on third down. So I guess this is what, year three with Sean Payton and Bo Nix?
Mm-hmm.
Together. And if Sean Payton believes in him, I get it. But he also believed in what's his name from in New Orleans?
Taysom Hill?
Yeah, he also believed in Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
I think Sean Payton does a lot of stuff great, but I think he's like overvaluing athletic quarterbacks who can make some plays with their legs.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be forever a surprise to me. That Sean Payton.
Bo Nix, I did not think he'd be any good.
Well, and just that Sean Payton decided, like, that's the guy I want to hitch my wagon to. And the Broncos have clearly been good enough.
Worked
and
out.
Bo Nix, late in these games, he's done a nice job in fourth quarters. But when you look at a lot of the stats and the analytics on what he does under pressure, off target, I mean, he is as inaccurate of a quarterback as you'll find. And that's still with an offense where a lot of it is getting the ball out quick, doing the screen game. And that's where Waddle will help a ton.
Yeah, no doubt. Probably should be better and definitely a contender. But I think it'd be more in spite of their offense and their offense breaking out. But you got to value Ted Wynn's game as well. He puts the Texans in there, still looking for a good offensive line and a run game. They did bring in David Montgomery. They signed Wyatt Teller and Braden Smith, and they drafted Keelan Rutledge. So that's going to be their chance at it. And the Saints under Kellen Moore. Pointing out that the drafting of Kelvin Banks and their other tackle over the last couple of years is starting to pay off. Fuaga. They drafted Fuaga and Banks.
Talise.
And then they signed the guard David Edwards, just played with the Bills. He's been above average. They add Jordan Tyson to Chris Olave if they stay healthy. And speaking of if they stay healthy, they added Achan, the running back,
that's right. Yeah.
To Kamara. So they have maybe the most injury-prone group of weapons in the entire league.
But, a lot of talent.
If it stays healthy, maybe it's them in San Francisco in the running for that. We got to run. We got football's finest coming up next, Chief.
A wild career move for a former head coach, plus another reason why Von Miller makes sense for the Cowboys next in the nation.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.